Hi, this is Debbie, your Blinds.com design consultant.
Oh, wow, a real person.
Yep, I'm here to help you with everything from selecting the perfect window treatments to...
I've got a complicated project.
No problem. We make the complex simple. And I can even help schedule a professional measure and install.
I didn't realize you did that.
Yeah, we can also send you samples, fast and free.
Wow, I mean, I always thought I needed a designer to come to my home, but scheduling's always a nightmare.
Not with Blinds.com. We're on your schedule, and there's no haggling, no pressure, no hidden fees either.
I just might have to do more.
Oh, okay, whatever you need. How about you tell me what you had in mind?
Okay, then. So the first room we're looking at is for guests coming over.
Blinds.com has covered over 25 million windows, all backed by a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Shop Blinds.com now and save up to 40% site-wide. Rules and restrictions may apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
We'll talk some NBA at noon with Jeff Zilgit from USA Today. A couple more crazy games last night in the NBA playoffs. I mean, every night here for the last 4 or 5 days and nights have been incredibly thrilling in terms of the finishes. Last night, you had an incredible comeback in the final 45 seconds by Indiana to take a 2-0 lead in Cleveland. And then Steph Curry got injured, and it may be serious. And Golden State still beat Minnesota in game one last night. The home team in this second round of the NBA playoffs has yet to win a game in five chances. That is unprecedented, unheard of, never happened prior to this year. Typically in the NBA, unlike in hockey, the best team wins 4 out of 7. We'll see what happens in this round. But Steph getting injured last night was a big blow. Adam Peters went on Pat McAfee yesterday. Had a lot to say about a lot of interesting topics. We're going to play some of that for you starting in about 10 minutes. So I was just reading, early this morning, just a bunch about, what's left in the NFL. This was before the Pickens trade was announced, and I mentioned Jalen Ramsey and Trey Hendrickson and who's going to be the Steelers quarterback is some of the big stories. And I came across this little nugget from a story on ESPN.com. It was key intelligence on all 32 teams after the 2025 NFL draft. And for Washington, and maybe Keim wrote this, but there's a quote in here from an AFC executive about Trey Amos. Trey Amos, the Ole Miss corner, was projected by most mock drafts. He was projected to go in the first round anywhere from the mid-first round to no worse than maybe early second round. Now, again, there was a lot of, mystery around picks 7 through 70 in this draft. There just was. There was a lot of belief from teams even, not just the mock drafters and the analysts, that, there were 60 players after the top 5 or 6 that were interchangeable for all intents and purposes. But anyway, Amos, for the most part, was consistently mocked in the mid-first to worst-case early second, and instead, he fell all the way until Washington's pick in the second round at number 61 overall. So, you know, it was lauded as a pick that was a great value pick. However, this was in the write-up, Key Intelligence on the Draft, when it came to Washington. Quote, "One aspect that might have hurt his value slightly is that multiple teams discovered a back injury in the pre-draft process. This wasn't a major red flag for some teams, but it was at least a mild concern that," quote, according to one AFC exec, said, "probably caused him to slide a bit," closed quote. However, people around Amos and the Commanders did not seem overly concerned about it. So I was curious about this. You don't see much written about a back injury. Now, what he did have at the combine was he had an ankle injury that knocked him out of most of the combine weekend for corners. So he had an ankle injury there, and he had had some hamstring injuries at Ole Miss, okay? And not necessarily, he had some hamstring issues at Louisiana. This was before he transferred to Bama, and then had some hamstring issues at Ole Miss as well. You know, hamstring issues, you know, we've been around sports as fans long enough to know that the soft tissue injuries are always concerning. Obviously, Marshon Lattimore, hamstring issues, right? In New Orleans, that cost him games, and then cost him games here after he got here. But nobody seemed very concerned about the hamstring injuries or even the ankle injury that caused him to miss most of the testing at the combine. He was able to run at the combine because he ran 4.43, but this intelligence about a back injury that was discovered in the pre-draft process, I think, was new news. And perhaps that's the reason that teams passed on him. The corners in the draft, and there were plenty of corners, just like there were other positions, but it was a deep draft. If you take Travis Hunter out of the equation, because corner, wide receiver, you know, before Amos went, Jahdae Barron went in the first round at number 20 overall to Denver. Maxwell Hairston, who ran a ridiculous 40 time, I think it was 4.28, sub 4.3 anyway, went at the end of the first round to Buffalo. Will Johnson, remember with the injury, he was the one that was projected to go second or first overall, if you didn't consider Travis Hunter to be a corner. But his injury caused him to drop to 15th pick in the second round to Arizona. And then Benjamin Morrison, who had had two hip surgeries. But I'm telling you, I think Washington liked him as a player. Going into the draft, Benjamin Morris got picked 8 slots ahead of Washington at number 21 by the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. And then Trey Amos got picked at number 29 at the end of the second round, 61 overall. The corner that went after Amos was the corner that I kind of fell in love with before the draft, Arian Porter from Iowa State. He went early in the third round, which was, you know, we talked about, I talked about the player and I said, I don't know how this guy is a projected day 3 pick or very late, you know, night 2 pick. He's got to go higher than that. He didn't go in the second round. He went in the third round, but he went early in the third round. And then Siobhan Revelle Jr. from East Carolina, a player that was mocked in the first round of a lot of drafts, he went to Dallas in the third round as well. You know, after that, there was Quincy Riley from Louisville, who people kind of liked. But I think Amos, in terms of most mocks, probably went before Morrison in most drafts. Instead, there were essentially 4 corners instead of 3 taken before him. But still, end of second round seems like good value. Maybe the back injury was part of the reason. I do think that there were some players that Washington would have been interested in had they fallen. I still think the first round, though, you know, Connerly was their guy after a certain point. You know, Tyler Booker, I had learned sort of before the draft, and that's why I was pumping Tyler Booker, if he fell to 29, would likely be the pick. I do think that Azarakou was somebody that they were very interested in. But remember about Donovan Azarakou from Boston College. Really a specialist, at least to start in his career. He's 248 pounds. The guy was not going to be your first-round edge-setting run stopper. He was going to be a specialized pass rusher. Dallas drafted him as well in the second round. What pick did he go in the second round? He went at 44 overall, 12th pick in the second round. But other than Booker, I question who else could have been there for Washington at 29 that they would have taken instead of Connerly Jr. I don't think it would have been Pierce. I don't know that. Let me be clear on that. I don't know that. But Pierce Jr., with some of the red flags on things like work ethic, I think would have been a player that would not have fit into what Washington has looked for, you know, in the draft here in the first 2 years. Donovan Jackson would have been interesting had he dropped to 29, the offensive lineman from Ohio State. I am curious as to what they thought of Matthew Golden, the wide receiver that went to Green Bay at 23 overall. I don't think that they would have picked a running back, you know, an Omarion Hampton at 22. In fact, I think if they were going to take a running back early, it would have been Travion Henderson. You know, I've heard people say Shamar Stewart, you know, because of the athletic, the ridiculous, you know, relative athletic score test. It's just that the production wasn't there. I don't know. Maybe if Shamar Stewart had fallen to 29, it's a possibility. But I would say out of all of the players that were picked before Connerly Jr., that Booker would have been the one that would have been interesting had he fallen to 29. I thought Azarakou would be strong possibility, and he was on the board at 29, but they like Connerly Jr. And we know that now, you know, almost definitively, not just because they told us that, but if you didn't take them at their word, the Howie Roseman sound that we played on the show yesterday with him trying, the Eagles trying to trade up a couple of spots with Washington, and they weren't going to take Connerly Jr. They were going to take the linebacker from Bama. They didn't know that they would get him at 32. They traded up one spot with Kansas City to 31 to take him. They would have taken him at 29. But Washington at that point knew that there was a chance, had they traded down even just a few spots to 32 where Philadelphia resided in that moment, that a team like the Chiefs could have taken Connerly Jr., and that's the player they wanted at that point. That's the player they wanted. The only other kind of interesting scenario, I think, is in the fourth round. They weren't in the third round, but in the fourth round, I know that they like and did like Jalen Lane, and you're going to hear Adam Peters talk about Jalen Lane. There's no doubt they like the player, but I do wonder if David Walker from Central Arkansas, or if Kyle Kennard from South Carolina, or maybe Jack Sawyer or Baron Sorrell, but I think the first two that I mentioned more than the latter two, four defensive end edges that went in the seven picks prior to Washington selecting at 26. So you had that one last big edge defensive end move by teams. Four of them taken in a five-pick stretch in the fourth round. I do wonder if one of those, you know, two, Kennard or Walker, had slipped to 20 to Washington at 128, if Washington would have gone edge defensive end there. But they certainly liked Jalen Lane. All right, when we come back, Adam Peters made an appearance yesterday on Pat McAfee's show. There was a lot that he answered. I mean, we got more from him in the Pat McAfee interview than we've typically gotten from Adam Peters. I'll play some of it for you when we come back. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980, theteam980.com. Don't forget, our show now is on YouTube. You can find us at the Team 980 YouTube page. If you download the Odyssey app, you can just open up the app and type in Team 980 and hit subscribe. But there's a big subscribe button. We'd ask you to hit that. That's good for us. And also hitting the like button is a good thing for us as well. So my show streams 10 to 1, as does Craig Hoffman's show on the Team 980 from 4 to 7.
College football summer is no time to slouch because we are taking you to school on the Cover 3 podcast, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. It's time for our annual summer school series as we take time to break down some of your favorite teams with experts and insiders who know these depth charts from top to bottom. But summer school is just extra credit as we go through positional drafts, player rankings, and more. Follow and listen to the Cover 3 podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
So Adam Peters made an appearance yesterday on the Pat McAfee show on ESPN. McAfee asked him a lot about a lot of different, you know, Washington football commanders related subjects, including, by the way, the name, which we will get to towards the end of this. But Max cut it all up. I actually didn't watch it. I've read a couple of the quotes. It sounds like he said more than he's typically said in the past. Adam Peters is perfect for the job in terms of not disclosing anything competitively. I think he does a really good job. He comes off as likable and yet not answering anything and yet not arrogant. That's kind of, you know, an overarching theme to the organization today versus yesterday, meaning, you know, under Snyder. This is an organization with some humility. The obvious is it's competence versus incompetence, but the arrogance of the last organization was so off-putting, and from my standpoint, there really isn't anything about the new group that is off-putting. And, you know, sometimes we look for, you know, there have been, look, there's some goofy stuff and some cliches and a lot of idioms about, you know, Mondays and talk to whatever the, you know, the Monday, what does Quinn call it? I don't mind any of that stuff. That stuff is fine when you're winning. But overall, there's just, I think, a very mature humility to the franchise. You know, for those of us of a certain age, it wasn't just all of the winning in the 80s and 90s. It was the way they won. They won by not telling you that they were going to win. And in fact, downplaying that they were good over and over again. That came really from Gibbs as much as it came from anybody else. But there was an incredible humbleness to their dominance that made them, I think for reasonably thinking people, that's subjective, I understand that, it just made them even more likable. I mean, there was nothing better than nobody kind of thinking Washington was anything other than, yeah, they're pretty good. They're going to be in the playoffs again. And then just making a deep run and winning, you know, a couple of road playoff games in Chicago. All right, I digress. Back to today. Adam Peters, the team's general manager. Talking about the Commanders, maybe this is not as much humility, but he's talking about the Commanders are now a cornerstone franchise. I haven't heard this one. Max, play it.
That was one of the biggest reasons why I really, really wanted to have this job. And the fact that this is a cornerstone franchise, the NFL, a place where, you know, growing up, this was a team you were watching, hearing about DC in the area and RFK, and then coming in and Josh being the owner and us having, and him having that vision of bringing this back, being a steward of this DMV area, and just really was appealing to me. So I really, really wanted to get this job, and so far it's been awesome. I mean, being a part of this, being just around everything that's happening, all the excitement, the stadium, the draft now, just really feel really grateful and thankful that I'm here.
Yeah, that's not the answer that I was thinking it would be. It's a great answer. And it's like for people of a certain age, and Adam Peters isn't, you know, didn't grow up really. How old is Adam Peters? Is Adam Peters 50 yet?
No, there's no way. If he is,
he's 45.
Okay.
He's 45. So he's just old enough to remember, you know, the Skins being one of the cornerstone franchises of the league. And look, people in the NFL, and I've talked a lot about this, about the desire to see Washington be relevant again, which, you know, is more, it's more than just us. There are NFL lifelong fans that when a team that's been downtrodden as long as we've been, they're excited to see the team back. You know, if Cleveland ever came, I mean, Cleveland never has had the success Washington's had, unless you go way back pre-Super Bowl era. But, like, I think it would be cool if Cleveland was a legitimate contender for a period of time, because their fan base has been incredibly loyal to that team over the years, and it's a great fan base. Peters knows, you know, Josh Harris knows. I thought about recently, like, what if a guy like Tillman Fertitta, who owns the Rockets, remember he was in the running, as was the Canadian guy whose name is escaping me right now. What if you ended up with more of an outsider having bought the team? We would have been thrilled because it would have been sold by Snyder, but it would have been different. I'm not saying that the results would have been any different. Well, I don't know how they would have run the team. But Josh Harris and Mitchell Rales in particular, and Mark Eyne as well, they have a true innate historical knowledge and context of what this thing was and what it should be moving forward. And I think that there's some benefit to that. This was Peters talking about last year's draft process and when they knew Jaden Daniels was the guy.
Well, I think it was just a process of everything from the moment he got in here, the moment we flew him in for interviewing for him after we drafted him, and he wanted to go through the playbook while he was here, and he was doing like dropbacks on the plane back to flying back to LA. And just every step of the way, you could see the humility that he had, the work ethic that he had, just the way he connected with his teammates. Out the fields are right over here, like out on the grass, and the way he went about everything. He earned everything he had. And so it was just kind of a step-by-step process, but you could feel it right away, what a special person he was.
You know, that was the, you know, part that cinched it. They needed to know that they were drafting a guy that was, you know, good and loved football, which is the saying these days. But, you know, we talked about this last year, and especially after the draft. I think a lot of us were told basically the first time Adam Peters legitimately turned on the tape and watched, he was blown away with what the player was in that final LSU season. The R&D or the analytics people blown away. And by the way, completely destroying some of the, you know, analytics narratives that were out there, you know, things like pressure to sack percentage, et cetera, you know, intermediate throws. They destroyed a lot of that narrative out there by watching the actual, you know, games, you know, play by play rather than looking at just numbers. But that had to be the first part. Like, oh my God, this guy is off the charts in terms of what he has the potential to be as a quarterback in the NFL. And then the next part was bringing him in and praying to God that he was the other part. Loved football, good teammate, great culture guy, etc. Had the work ethic, had the smarts, and he had it all. He was, you know, taking dropbacks on the plane. This was Adam Peters on the Pat McAfee show yesterday talking about sort of the emphasis in this offseason to bolster the offensive line.
I think in the offseason when we had the opportunity to get Tunsil, which, you know, it doesn't come around that often to get a blue chip left tackle, one of the best left tackles in the league. So we felt that was an opportunity that we didn't want to pass up. And for the reasons you're talking about, like, we want to protect Jaden and really he's the cornerstone of our franchise. We want to make sure we're protecting him. And then, so we got that done. And then we really wanted Connerly. And that letter was cool because, you know, Cliff, he's a tireless worker. It's unbelievable how much he works. And as he's doing draft prep, he's also watching college teams for different plays and different, like, scheme and just different things he can learn from them so he can implement into what we do. And he watched a lot of Oregon. So he said, I watched every single snap of Oregon. And, like, he usually just watches, like, the skill guys, the quarterbacks, receivers, tight ends, running backs. And so he left that note on my desk. He came by to say what's up and just wrote that down and left it on my desk. I was like, all right, well, if Cliff wants this guy, then I'm good.
Yeah, a couple of things about that answer, you know, hearing it for the first time. Just a reminder, if you didn't know what he was referring to, Cliff Kingsbury put a note on Adam Peters' desk before the draft saying, Oregon's left tackle, please. He was a big fan of Connerly Jr. There's also the part in there that Cliff watches a lot of college tape. Why? Because the innovation in football comes at the lower levels offensively. It just always has. High school level and college level. Cliff's been a big part of that. You know, being a part of Air Raid, Hal Mumme, and everybody that followed. And Cliff, you know, is looking for new things, you know, to implement at the pro level. And Oregon's always one of those teams, you know, going back to Chip Kelly and Cristobal and Dan Lanning, the whole, you know, the whole nine yards about what Oregon's been about. And he saw and recognized Connerly Jr. At that point. A follow-up, by the way, to him bringing Cliff into the conversation of talking about the offensive line, he was asked by McAfee if he was worried about losing Cliff to a head coaching gig in this offseason. Here's what Adam Peters said.
He's a great coach and he's a great person, but I think what's cool about here is what the culture DQ has created, where people want to be here, people want to stay here, they're having fun working, they're having fun playing, so it makes it an easy decision. If it's not your perfect role that you want to move up to, whether it's head coach or something else, you have a great home here, and really that's how I felt when I was in San Francisco under John Lynch, where I really loved being there, but if there was the great opportunity came like it did with Washington, then I could take it. But if not, then you know I'm really, really happy here, and that's the culture that DQ has created within the staff here.
Yeah, you know, Cliff Kingsbury, remember, is still getting paid for another two seasons as a head coach by the Arizona Cardinals. So I guess they're picking up the delta between what Washington's paying and what they would have been paying. So he's making head coach money. Because they had signed him to that contract before they ended up firing him. The jobs that Kingsbury could have had were not the most attractive in this, you know, head coaching cycle. You know, there was talk of him potentially being a candidate in New Orleans. New Orleans is in trouble, man, cap-wise, talent-wise, etc. There was, you know, the opportunity potentially if Ben Johnson took somewhere else like New England, Chicago, I think would have been interested. But Ben Johnson, I think, was the first choice there. Is it possible that that Vegas would have been interested? Maybe Dallas would have been interested, perhaps. But not the greatest of opportunities. The Chicago and New England opportunities in this offseason because of cap space, draft choices, and, by the way, of course, young talent at quarterback were the ideal, you know, opportunities. And New England went Vrabel. They could have gone Vrabel, I think, last year, but Vrabel held out, you know, did the one-year holdout thing. And then Chicago went Ben Johnson from Detroit. Will there be better opportunities next year? Maybe. I would certainly... Cliff, you know, I do believe Cliff when he says, you know, I'm happy right now. I love, you know, just coaching offense. But a competitor like Cliff Kingsbury, you know, at whatever age he is, early 40s, is going to take another swing at being a head coach. I don't think there's any doubt about that. All right, this was more from Adam Peters than I think we've gotten before on the acquisition in the offseason of Deebo Samuel.
Yeah, that was really cool. It was actually at the combine. I was hanging out with Lynch at lunch, and we started talking about it. And, you know, obviously there's a lot of talks that go into it, but knowing Deebo from when we drafted him to just the competitor that he is on the field, he's one of the best competitors on the field that I've ever seen in my life. And just he can put a team on his back and will you to win. So understanding what type of person he was, understanding that I work with John, and you know, he's going to be awesome to deal with. And then understanding our offense, which is, you know, getting the ball out of Jaden's hands quickly. And he's really good at that and getting the ball in space and moving fast. That's going to present a lot of problems for defenses.
If he's healthy this year, mark me down if I'm not down for this already, Max. I think Deebo Samuel's going to have a massive season this year. Health is everything with him.
Contract year, Deebo.
it's contract year Debo, but the fit is an excellent one, and this will be the best quarterback he's played with by miles.
Absolutely.
And so, you know, something that Peter said about Debo Samuel has been a 49ers staple here during the John Lynch, Kyle Shanahan era. They look for relentless, high-energy competitors. I mean, that's what the 49ers have been about, right? With Debo, with Kittle, with McCaffrey, with Trent, with Fred Warner, with who am I forgetting? I mean, Debo after the catch is almost impossible to tackle. This is I just have a feeling that it's not going to take long. If he's healthy, that's the big if, because he's been injured a bunch. If he's healthy, it's not going to take long for us to realize that a fifth rounder for Debo Samuel was an absolute steal in terms of what he can be for this team with this OC and this quarterback. I think he's going to get used in so many different ways. He's going to take, you know, he's going to take jet sweeps for 8 yards when it should have been two or three. He's going to take zone read, option handoffs from JD5 when the defense is playing quarterback run, and he's going to rip those for 10, 15 yards. He's going to catch a bubble, break three tackles, move the sticks. He's going to be very effective in the red zone in particular. Again, health, everything. But if he's healthy, it's going to be a massive addition to this offense. This was Adam Peters on who he listens to when making roster decisions.
Yeah, we're listening to everybody in the building, AJ, and the R&D team especially. It's really cool because it feels like there's 14 people in this one little office. It's like a big think tank, and they're all really smart, and they're all really passionate. And like a cool story this year was when we drafted Trey Amos, who's like an R&D darling. We call him analytics, we call him R&D. But when we drafted him, you could hear like a roar from like two doors down because we drafted him and that he fell to us, which was really awesome. But all his metrics were incredible. But listening to them and being their passion about whether we're making a trade, whether we're making a draft pick, whether we're signing a free agent. But then there's also the coaching aspect and, of course, the scouting aspect and everybody working together in unison and collaborating. It's been really cool, and we're just getting started. I think we're going to get better and better as the years go on.
I'm really interested in who the stars in the organization are. He didn't mention anybody by name. You know, there are a bunch of names that some of you guys are familiar with. You know, it starts with Adam Peters and Lance Newmark, you know, the assistant GM, who also had other opportunities after this season and decided to stay here. There's Brandon Sosna. I think he's different. He may be more involved in some of the game day stuff. But you've got, you know, Scott Fitterer, who is a former GM. You've got Tim Gribble still on the staff. You've got Blackburn, who's actually the head of player personnel. You've got some really sharp scouts. You've got some really sharp guys in what they call their R&D department or analytics department. A couple of holdovers from the last regime who are super talented. I there's somebody... Or there's a couple of guys you would have to think, you know, he goes to and really sees a future GM in. I'd love to know who those people are after, like, a guy like Newmark. All right, when we come back, a little bit more from Adam Peters. I'm actually interested in hearing him. You know, sometimes it's just true. These pressers where it's all local, you know, they ask the right questions. I'm not saying that they don't. But sometimes when you're on the Pat McAfee show, you get a little bit more out of the guests than you do when it's sort of the routine, you know, pre-draft, post-draft, pre-rookie minicamp, you know, presser, etc. What he said about Jalen Lane, you'll want to hear. That's coming up next.
All right, the arms race in the NFC Beast is heating up. The Steelers are sending George Pickens and a sixth-round pick to the Dallas Cowboys for a 2026 third and a 2027 sixth round pick. After signing a three-year deal prior to the 2024 season, Gabe Davis has been released by the Jacksonville Jaguars. He had 20 receptions for 239 yards and two touchdowns in 10 games played. The Utah Hockey Club has officially decided upon a name following a 13-month process that included 850,000 ballots cast by fans in multiple rounds of voting. They will now be known as the Utah Mammoth. The Nats split the doubleheader with Cleveland. Game one, they win 10-9. Jorge Lopez gets credited with the win. Kyle Finnegan gets the save. And game two, they lose 9-1. Brad Lord has six innings pitched, three hits, gave up three earned runs, and four strikeouts. The Caps drop one of the Canes 2-1 in overtime. Jacob Slavin with the overtime winner. And the Canes just outplayed the Caps and outshot them too, 33-14. Logan Thompson saved 31 of 33 shots, still at 2 in. Game 2 is tomorrow at 6:45 on 106.7 The Fan. This update is sponsored by the Team 980 YouTube page. Just open the app, type in the Team 980, and hit subscribe. Kevin Sheehan is live from 10 to 1 and Craig Hoffman from 4 to 7. Don't forget to like the stream and turn on notifications to stay up to date on all things DC sports. And that's what's trending.
We are going to talk some NBA playoffs at noon with Jeff Zilgit from USA Today. I'll give you my thoughts, too, on the two games last night. The games the last few days and few nights have been insane, good and bad. More on that coming up at 12. But Adam Peters made a visit to the Pat McAfee show yesterday and actually, you know, talked more for Adam Peters than we typically hear. There are a few more sound bites from Adam Peters that I want to play for you. This was him talking about selecting Jalen Lane in the fourth round, the wide receiver and punt returner out of Virginia Tech.
The cool thing about that one is on Saturdays before the draft, we get everybody in the room, all the scouts, the coordinators, R&D, and we do this thing. We actually took it from San Francisco. We call it the Commander's Caucus, which is a weird name. But so with Jalen, he was everybody gets a chance to vote on who is their favorite player that they want to draft on day three. It's really day three is a scouts day. So it's awesome. Like everybody is involved. It's really cool. So we went around the room and he had by far the most votes of anybody in the room. So for there, you have the buy-in from the R&D, you have the buy-in from the coaches who also voted, you have the buy-in from all of our scouts. And it's just a matter of, all right, well, hopefully he'll get to us because you really have buy-in from everybody in the building. So he was our number one returner in the draft. Larry Izzo was one of the people that voted for him. So yeah, it all worked out really well. He fell to us, which we were really excited about. And that was an easy pick. He's awesome. And he just had his birthday the other day. He's getting married this summer. He's like, he's incredible. So I can't wait. He's coming here Thursday. So I can't wait to meet him in person. Our coaches worked him out down there. Just really one of those ones where you really want to happen, and it did, and you feel really good about those.
There you go on Jalen Lane. Commander's Caucus does not ring well for many of us. Maybe we can refer to them as kind of Washington winners or something like that. But, yeah, they have full Commander's talk inside that building where it's very popular, as Josh Harris told us a few months ago. I love hearing what I heard about Jalen Lane. Look, you know, they don't have an obvious punt returner for starters. You know, let's hope that teams punt more against us than they did last year. But without Jamison Crowder, you know, right now, Luke McCaffrey's a possibility. I forget who else is on the roster that's a possibility. I guess there's some guys deep down in the roster. You know, the kid from UCLA that's still on the roster somewhere. Forgetting his name. Kaz Allen. But, you know, lots of speed. This guy apparently is a grade A, you know, culture guy. You know, I think one of the things we thought of was another, you know, playmaker offensively, and that's the one that they got in this offseason along with Deebo Samuel. You know, in terms of additional playmakers in this offseason, it was Deebo, Jalen Lane, and I guess if you want to say bringing back Noah Brown and Ertz, you know, that's where they are on that. All right, this was Adam Peters talking about the Howie Roseman video that we played for you yesterday, where Howie Roseman called Adam Peters during the draft trying to trade up three spots from 32 to 29. They wanted to take the linebacker from Bama. Washington decided not to do it. You heard Howie Roseman say he wanted, you know, an NFC East tax on the trade. And then you heard Howie Roseman respond with the pick of Josh Connerly Jr. when he said, good pick. Well, he was asked, Adam Peters was, by Pat McAfee and company, AJ Hawk, etc., on their show yesterday about that Howie Roseman draft video.
That was actually me busting his chops and on TV for, because he did that to me. And so that part they left out. But my first time talking to Howie, he was trying to trade me a player last offseason. It was like the first phone call we had. He's like, yeah, well, we can do this or that. But, you know, because you're in division, there's a tax. You're going to have to pay a little more. And so that was just me throwing it back at him. And we were just joking around about it. But it's actually really funny. He's a great guy. He's a great GM, obviously. And he's awesome to deal with. We've done two deals already together and probably do more. But, it was just us back and forth having fun.
Yeah, the two deals being draft day last year when the Eagles traded up into the early portion of the second round and selected Cooper DeJean, and Washington ended up getting two picks in the middle of the third round, which were Ben Sinnott and Mikey Sanristil, right? I think those were the two picks that they ended up picking. So they had three second-round picks, which included Johnny Newton early on in that second round. This was Adam Peters just talking about the NFC East and shaping the roster to compete within the division.
Yeah, I mean, you're always thinking about that. You're always thinking about how to beat every team in your division, every team in your conference, like every single second and every single day. Like that's what I stay up at night thinking about. But in terms of those trades, those are risks that you have to take. Now, do I think, you know, you can't be scared making those trades if you think they're going to, you know, you're worried about the press clippings and all that. You're trying to make the best decision for your own team. And if you think that's the best decision for your own team to help win, then do it. But if it's something, if you're scared about it, you probably won't make the right decision.
And then Adam Peters actually complimented, I've not heard this yet, Max cut this up, complimented the DC media for positive coverage.
Yeah, they're great. They work extremely hard. They're diligent. They ask great questions. They're really respectful. They're awesome to work with. So I think, you know, coming in and having Josh here and myself and DQ coming in, I think they've been really, really respectful for us, respectful to us. And, you know, it's been awesome to work with them. So I have no issues there. It's been positive so far, you know, and I know it's not always going to be that way, but they've been awesome.
What was the question? Did McAfee just ask him about DC media?
I really wish I knew because I pulled this from G&D yesterday because they had also kind of touched on it a little bit and Darius cut it up. But I'm going to need to go back and listen to that question because I'm actually very curious as to getting asked by Pat McAfee show about like DC sports media.
Yeah, I mean, this has been a conversation we've had for years. Look, big picture, when you are really good, it's going to be hard to be even constructively critical at times. I thought about this at some point a few weeks ago when Adam Peters said something, and I'm forgetting what it was, but you know, during the course of the year, it was just so overwhelmingly obvious that this organization was different. The team was completely different, obviously driven more by Jaden Daniels than anything else, understood. But I was trying to think of, at any point during the season, was I, you know, my typical constructively critical of various things, because there was so much to pick and nitpick at over the years. The only thing I could think about, and I'm sure somebody will remind me of something else, but I hated the opener in which at Tampa, when they were out of the game, they were still running Jaden Daniels on read option keepers into a defense that was really good in a game they could not win late in the fourth quarter. That was the only thing I remember saying, don't let Cliff Kingsbury do that. Can you imagine if he had gotten hurt? And he took a couple of big shots, remember, at the end of that first game?
Mm-hmm.
And that was to me, the only massive head scratcher of the year. Somebody will remind me of something else, I'm sure. This was Adam Peters, and this is the last one we'll play, number 12, Max. I guess he was asked about the name. Here's what he said.
Do you like the name?
Love it.
I mean, you got it.
Can't say it.
Yeah. No, honestly, I mean, we've embraced it. We've like our players have embraced it. We've embraced it, what a commander is. We've defined what a commander is. So I think everybody's all in on it. So we're pumped, and we're gonna keep going with it until they tell us not to.
Adam Peters on the name. Look, that answer, first time hearing it, goes hand in hand with the Josh Harris answer. That inside that building, they're all on board. I doubt that that's true, but they can't say it any other way, you know, without being disingenuous. Because outside of that building, nobody's all in. No, there are some people that are all in, but the majority are not all in on the name. I think we all know that. All right, let's switch subjects. Good stuff, actually, from Adam Peters. Some really interesting stuff and more open in answering some of the questions than he typically has been. He's smart, for starters. There's no doubt about that. He's also clearly likable. I'm assuming he's a good guy. I've heard good things about him from people that know him. And, you know, they got Jaden Daniels. And when you get the quarterback right, it certainly makes everything else a lot easier to deal with, even when you make a couple of mistakes. All right, up next, we'll talk some NBA playoffs with Jeff Zilgit from USA Today.